Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. We are here in These Things Happen. Down on the seafront, on Roker, it's a bar that's been open for a while. You've probably heard us mention it before. We've done a few reactions from here. So come and check it out. And we'll have more news related to this bar later on in terms of some live action that we're going to do. But I'm here and Matt is with me as well.
Hello, you're right.
Yeah, handy for you, isn't it?
Good, isn't it? Yeah.
I can't remember you recommend any pubs or bars next to my house on the other side of Sunderland.
No, the wrong side of Sunderland.
No, I think you'll find the posh side of Sunderland.
You're in that side now.
We are joined by former Sunderland player Thomas Butler as well. Good evening, Thomas.
How are we doing, folks? Are we all right?
Yes, this is your territory as well, yeah?
This is my neck of the woods, and you're right. You do need a passport to get over this side of the water, 100%.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to talking to you today. We'll have a bit of crack with you, and we'll obviously mention that thing we've kind of hinted at the start. So what we'll do is we'll talk about the Norwich game a little bit. I know people don't necessarily come to us for like loads of opposition insight.
I'm well known for the preview podcast, Steve.
For the preview podcast, but
which is why I'm not doing this one, because it's not really going to be a preview podcast.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That is your brand and people know you. But what I was saying was like opposition insight might not be the thing that we focus on as much as other podcasts. That's fine.
You should go.
It's all doing the same thing, isn't it?
You should go and listen to What the Folk if you want an insight.
Yeah. Even though we did it first, just saying.
We did.
We did it first before other podcasts started to do it, but you know, we're not bitter about that, and it's less work for us to do, to be honest. So we don't mind about that. So we're just going to talk about this, that, and everything. We'll have a little bit of a chat about the current situation. Three defeats in a row, of course, for Sunderland. Look ahead to Norwich a little bit, and then we'll have a bit of crack with Thomas just about a little bit of an insight into his Sunderland career, and then go from there. Everything sound all right?
Sounds good. All right. Colourful career.
Sounds great, Steve.
Sounds great. Right, tell me what's happening in a general dressing room, Thomas, when you're losing three games in a row and your manager is a caretaker manager.
It's confidence as always. Yeah, I've been there before. I've been in those seasons with record, you know, low points, if you know what I mean. And it's the worst thing is you see the fans and you see the frustrations, obviously, you know, you even at half time if it's 0-0, you can kind of feel it kind of around the ground, the groans and all that type of stuff. So especially in a big stadium, you can kind of feel it, and it does settle in.
I don't think we're not quite there yet, are we? Like, it's close. You feel like it's round the corner, don't you? You feel like that's round the corner.
There were a few mumblings on Saturday, and understandably so. Yeah, just like, it's uneasy. It's really uneasy. There's like things like efforts on goal that would have got a round of applause 3 weeks ago that are now like groaned at because it's like, what are you doing? Like, it's mad how it's like literally a boof. Things change. Like, it's crazy.
It's because the expectations are so high because it's such a big club. And the pressure comes with it. And that's why I think players, and when they're doing the recruiting, it's, you know, do they sit down with the players and say, look, do you realise what you're coming into here? Because this is what they expect. You know, like, you know, it's, and that's why I think it's really tough sometimes. And especially, obviously, look, three losses in a row in a place like this, you do feel it, and you feel it even around the town. You feel it outside the ground. You feel it when you go into bars and places are empty, and it's just a knock-on effect is massive, and you don't really realise it until you're there. And obviously I've seen it, and I've been there before where we've probably lost, if I get three, that's not bad, I'll probably take that.
Yeah.
I've probably been around where we've lost 15 on the bounce. So come at me when that's happening, and then you'll know.
And we aren't quite there yet, but I do think like it's a it's an important part of the season, as we were talking about on Monday, because season ticket renewals will be out soon, and we've been saying this, not to go over all ground, but we've been warning them of this, that this is what happens. Don't take things for granted. And the last thing you need when you're in this situation, because they've messed up royally on a number of things, going back to the Newcastle allegation, to be frank. And what do you need? What do you really want to happen when you get to this point? You want Jack Clark to be injured for 6 weeks?
Yeah, you do, don't you? I think, like, as well, like, obviously the Clark's knackered, and it seems like lots of things are starting to conspire against us at the minute, and, like, Roberts is obviously injured, Ballard's still suspended. But just touching on the last, like, the three defeats in a row as well, I think what's really not helped is the teams that we've lost to. Like, we've lost to Huddersfield, Birmingham and Swansea.
This was supposed to be the 9 points we're going to pick up and get the season back on track.
And I think they are the three teams, like, about three places above the bottom three. They were nine. That was 7 points at least there. I mean, really. You know, you'd be looking at them ahead of the ones that we've now got. And now, obviously, Clark was injured for... He was a doubt for the Swansea game. Yeah. And now, all of a sudden, he was out. Maybe a doubt for the South. And now he's out for 6 weeks. So it's... Something was obviously...
And you're hoping that's best-case scenario, six weeks. You normally get physios that the manager's literally saying to him, look, please, you know, do us a favour here. And he's 6 weeks, but it might be more than that. So then you're hoping it's not one of those ones. You know what I mean? So you've, again, been in there before, and... If you are a key player at that specific time, the manager will be begging you, come on, you'll be all right, you'll be all right. And then you're almost saying 6 weeks, but might be a couple more, which you're hoping it's not, especially with him, because, again, he's the game changer, isn't he? So,
and as good as he is, if this happens 6 months ago when Tony Mowbray said we're playing well, we're on the front foot and everything's clicking, it doesn't hit you as much then, does it? Like, what would the perspective of a player around that, like, now? Like, you're going through a little bit of a sticky patch now, and you're going to talk about this as players as well as fans would, yeah?
Yeah, it's morale as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'll have other players around, those types of players that can win you games. And then if you see them, if you're struggling a little bit, say you're operating at 6, 7 out of a 10, and if you see one of your key players who you know, listen, even if we're all at 6s and 7s, Jack's going to get us out of shit here. We're all right. If he's injured now it's a kind of a right. Everyone's looking around the change room to say, right, who's going to be the main man? Who's going to be the character to step in his shoes now and give us a big lift? And I'm not sure if there's if you look around now, apart from him, who's going to give you that lift? And that's why I think where you'll see the characters come out. You'll either, one or two might surprise you and go, wow, I didn't know he had that in the locker to step in someone's shoes. Or it's going to be really tough few weeks. It'll be one of those.
Okay, so it is, and we've spoken loads and loads about the lack of experience, and we're not going to go like over all ground on that, but the last thing those at the top who've put all this together would have wanted was people like Clark, Roberts, the experienced ones to go out. Evans was obviously the first one to go because they backed themselves into a corner again with that, haven't they?
But it'd be like my era back in the day. If I mean, we revolved around Kevin Phillips. So if Kevin Phillips got injured, there wasn't really a plan B, really. It was like, we are in real big trouble here. Obviously, Quinny played up against Kev. Now, if both of them got injured, you can forget it. It would have been...
After Diggio and Bridges went.
After they went. I mean, that's still... And even then, that was in the Championship when you think back then. Mm. We had four of those types of strikers then. Now, you can imagine the Championship now with those four now. Mm-hmm. You'd be probably on top of the league winning by 20 points.
Clear. Four strikers?
Yeah. You know, so it's we're in the era now where the problem is, I think, in the Championship especially, is... Every other team is chasing the same little pool of strikers, and unless you're willing to outspend other people, and I get it, you don't want to overspend, and Sunderland have done that in the past. I mean, caught with 5-year contracts,
completely,
people on 50, 60 a week,
and
quite happy to take money. So I see both sides now, which I didn't as a player, but now I see it and say, well, hold on a minute, do we really want to pay someone who should be only on 10 a week, give them 40 just to outbid everyone else, and they only give us 6 goals? So, or do you take the gamble and it gets you 30 goals and you get promoted? So it's a really tough one from the money perspective, the money side, and I understand it. And that's why I always think recruitment's so hard. I mean, I was saying to Matt earlier on, saying you'll have two or three really good years of recruitment and fans are buzzing, everyone's happy, one really bad year, and then it's, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing, and you're getting slow. And I get it. It's that type of frustration. It's really tough. It's really hard.
Yeah, totally. And this summer's going to be, it's going to be huge on that front, isn't it? But
I think with Clark, obviously, you mentioned earlier in the season, I think with Clark, he is a bit of a freak. I think a bit like Phillips. Yeah. He's like, he is irreplaceable at this level. Like, yeah. So I think at any point of the season, it would have been like massively disruptive. You just have to look at his stats this season. Even in October, November, he was way ahead of everybody else in the team. But obviously then we had Roberts there. And I know people give Roberts pelt. He's a brilliant footballer, Roberts.
You'd need him in the team now.
Of course, 100%.
Yeah. I think it's the slander Roberts gets, I think, is mental. Because he's,
people focus on stats too much.
Yeah, and it's, if you watch, I love watching Patrick Roberts play football. It's brilliant. And the sooner we can get him back in the team, better. But I think with Clark, he is a freak. And he is irreplaceable, but I think it's happened at just possibly the worst time. Like, it's mad. And
it's because the issue is, you could have said this about Ahmad last year as well.
Yeah.
So then when it happens again, I think the frustration is, if the fans had seen anything from anybody else who've been purchased in the last couple of years, to give you a bit hope that they're going to be the next person. So Ahmad Lee, Clark was good last season, but he wasn't as ridiculous as he was this season. So when Ahmad left, you saw enough from Clark last season to say, well, he could be the one to step up. There's nobody now.
That's where recruitment is massive. And I mean, I go back to my time when I was at Swansea in League One. We probably had four wingers. So it was all not far off the same level. So you had like two wingers that will start all the time. And no matter what happens to those two wingers, the other two are almost a couple of percent just below them, but enough to do a job. Now, that's brilliant recruitment, because it's hard and you've got to pay them as well. So are Sunderland willing to say, right, okay, look, there's two wingers or two wide men. Are we willing to try and, if it's going to cost 4 or 5 million per winger as backup wingers almost, and then you've got to try and keep them happy and say, look, your third, fourth choice winger, can you keep them happy as well? And say, look, listen, if these lads are playing in Hedia, you're going to have to be willing to, just when they get injured, you're almost willing to back up and buy into what the club are doing to get where we need to get to. We need to get promoted, but we need two positions almost covered across the whole 11. So you almost need 22 players, another 11, almost standard to just walk in. It was like, and I talk about Bridges and Danny Dicchio saying there. So like, obviously Deitch wasn't nowhere near like Quinney's level, but Deitch could come in and do enough just to get through 4 or 5, 6 games then until Quinney's back. And then they just swapped over. And then Bridges then was not a bad replacement for Kev sometimes. But again, are you willing to go out? Are you willing to pay for it? And that's all to do with the business side of stuff. And can you go? Are they available? So where are these players? And what other clubs are competing? Do we have the muscle to out-muscle those types of other clubs? It's really tough.
It is. And I think, like, we keep reiterating, you know, we acknowledge that. You mentioned now we've had a history of overpaying and not really having a plan, and just, you know, you watch the first season of Sunderland Until I Die, and they're clearly just getting in who they can. And like, it is really refreshing that we aren't there anymore, and we acknowledge that all the time, and that as a, from a general template and a general plan and process, they've done really well and they've brought in some really good players and stuff. But it's now, it's, it can't just, you know, that's just took us from where we bottomed out. That can never be. That can never be the sort of aim. It's got to be above that.
I think it's time to move on from the...
Well, we used to be in League One.
We're not in League One anymore. Because, like, not...
It's not the benchmark, is it? Not, I don't know why I can't think of the word benchmark.
Yeah, not losing 6-0 to Bolton is not a benchmark. Yeah. Like, that shouldn't be a thing. Yeah. And I think it's not just, like, criticising for the sake of it, but if you look at the recruitment in January, I mentioned it, Thomas, before we were talking about it. Southampton did this in the Premier League. They were much higher. They were churning over players, bringing in players for lowish fees, selling them on, and then all of a sudden, bang, it went, and then they got relegated. Yeah. And now, obviously, they're on the way back up now, obviously, but it can happen really quickly if you don't replace a player. We could lose
Swansea, people used to say that about
us. We could lose the spine of the team in the summer. We could lose Ballard, Neil and Clark, and possibly the goalkeeper. I'm not, you know, whatever the goalkeeper. But that's going to be so difficult to replace, and we don't have any... It's going to have to be fresh recruitment. We don't have anyone who they've recruited recently that can just...
That's the worrying thing, yeah.
There's no one waiting quality, in the wings
replacing quality with similar type of quality. Yeah. And again, it's keeping that quality happy. That's the tough bit. If you've got similar players on a similar type of level, are they happy to just be on the bench? Well, and how do you keep them entertained? How do you keep them happy? And that's where you need a top draw manager then with a good personality to manage them. Yeah. Like I've had, when we've been promoted, when I've done a Swansea League One, we had Roberto Martinez. And I don't know how he did it, but he kept even the reserves happy, which I've never seen in my life. Now, I don't know how he's done it, but it's just the way he was communicating and speaking to them and pulling them every day and saying, you're a big part of where we're going, what we want to achieve, and without you, we need you. Be ready. And he kept kind of like interacting with when you were just a little bit outside of you, always felt, you know what, I've got a chance. He's not like the other managers who just blank you and walk past you and you're not part of it. He kind of kept you involved. So I think the manager is absolutely vital. But if he's got a big personality and he can inspire the other ones outside that, say like 12, 13, 14, that are guaranteed to be kind of playing every week, you've got to keep them engaged. Because I've seen a few times with Sunderland is that some lads will come on and it just looks like they're way off some of the lads that are coming on. They're not even close. And in the Championship, like, it's such a hard league. That's why there's crazy results where, like you were saying earlier on, Matt, was... It's 7 points from where Sunderland are to in the bottom three.
Well, 12 points from the bottom three.
Sorry, 12 points.
Points from the playoffs. Yeah. It's, so that, like within two, but the thing
it's is, nothing, is it?
It's crazy.
It's two games in 4 days. Yeah. So that could swing either way. You could be a point off sixth, or you could be 6 points off the bottom three by Tuesday. Yeah. It's mad. It's mad. And I think,
I think with the Championship as well is from what I've seen for the over the years and teams I've known and players that have played in it and been successful, is that spine you talk about is. You need a top draw centre back. You need a top draw centre mid. You need that 20 goal striker, and then obviously then you need your two or three backups if they get injured. But you're gonna have to pay for it, unfortunately.
And I keep seeing on
that's a bad thing about it. You're gonna have to.
No,
pay.
No, it is, and I keep seeing on Twitter though, like, oh, Clark's injured, so well, it'll just give us a chance to see what we're like without him, because we've got. But the players that we've got here. They cannot be the replacement for Jack. So it's not like what it would be like next season. Because if you're going into next season with no disrespect, but Mundell and Barr.
Unless Mundell suddenly finds this gear we haven't seen yet. And it's early days, so you never see.
And you hope he does.
Yeah,
like, I hope this might be.
Yeah. There's flashes of it, but like it's just stratospheres apart from what.
Yeah, at the moment, yeah.
Totally. And I think that's the contingencies is, do they sit down and say, what ifs? And that's what I would be doing as recruitment. I'd be saying, what's the worst case scenario here in next month if we lose A, B, C, D from our group?
Yeah.
Right, if we lose them, who's ready to go in? Nobody. Right. All right, well, and it's as simple as that. Right, well, what are we doing?
I'm going to put this question to the floor.
But, like, you know what I mean? I would be kind of going, and I used to see in the Premier League, and I remembered it. When we were in the Premier League, I remember Peter Reid used to look around on our bench. We were playing against Arsenal, and Arsene Wenger's looking on his bench, and he's looking around and he sees... Perez, Youngberg, whoever it is on the bench, and then Reedy's gone, I need to make some changes, and he looks around and sees Butler, Kyle, Proctor, and he's almost gone, oh god, like, how am I going to change it? Well, look at my bench and look at Arsenal's, and it's almost comical because you're going, you're almost looking at the manager saying, I feel your pain, and I'm on the bench looking at him going, Gaffer, I'm almost apologising to him saying, sorry Gaffer, I'm on 700 quid a week and there's a lad on the bench next to me on 75 grand a week. So you know what I mean, so you kind of feel their pain a little bit. But
and what they would have, and we're talking about everything, you know, everything up until a point has gone right for those in charge of like recruitment and everything else, and has gone, and we're not getting like how that's made the market, in my opinion, that's arguably been their downfall. Now things are going wrong and people are getting injured and results are going wrong. And also, we were talking about the last thing they wanted was Clark to get injured. But another thing is, they send out two players to Hibs and they're thinking, please just rip it up. Please just rip it up. And the two guys are sitting on the bench.
And that's like, they normally have arrangements where before you go on loan...
Got to play.
The reasons why you're going is you have to play, but it doesn't exist over here because if you're a manager and someone's just not at it, doesn't matter if he's on 20 grand a week, if he's not at it, you could lose a whole change room. And I've seen it happen before where you know, the chairman and the directors are ringing up the manager saying, he's on 20 grand a week, he has to play. And the manager's going, he is brutal, I can't play him. You just don't know what he's talking about. So there's a big gap from operations upstairs to football operations on the pitch. So you could lose everyone by doing that. Do you know what I mean? And it's those lads then that have gone there and they're not playing. Well, then it's exactly what it is. It's like, there's another one. That's another kicking the stones you don't need. Do you know what I mean? It's
well, I think Triant has started off in the side as well. He played the first four games and now he's no longer in the side. He's behind God knows who in the pecking order. But Meander, it's just been a total waste of time. Triant just gave away a penalty on his debut. They gave away another penalty, I think, the week after. It's not like these players are.
That's the level they should be at now, developing their career. That's the thing.
They're not good enough, are they?
Not for a championship team.
Like, no. You're looking at that. If you can't get in that Hibs team, who are what, sixth, seventh in the SPL? I don't know where they are. I've no idea. But they're not winning the league, are they? Yeah. They're not like
no.
And if he can't get in that, and if he's been dropped from that team, how the hell is he supposed to come up and play against Leicester?
Yeah.
Like it's not. It just isn't practical. Silt's done okay, but he's played about five games. And barely at centre half. Like he's shunted them out at right back and he's shunted them. And Meander, I don't know. The recruitment's just barbaric.
It's really hard. And it's. You can kind of explain it when. I used to work in recruitment when I finished playing football. And I remember getting a player over from Limerick in League of Ireland over to Brentford. And Ollie Watkins and all these lads were ahead of him in the championship and he was flying Brentford. The recruitment was one of the best around and still is. And he was fifth choice winger. And I think he only cost like 50 or 60 grand, something like that. I actually, when I was working in that recruitment, offered him to Sunderland and they didn't take him. And all he's about is pace and power. His name's Chidoze Egbene. He plays for Luton. He's a left, he's a winger.
Oh, yeah.
So he's flying now at Luton, one of the main men for them, the Premier League, you know. So he went to Exeter in League 2 and struggled on loan. And he was ringing me saying, I've been dropped. I'm struggling here. Now he's playing the Premier League at Luton and he's main man every week. So, like, it's tough sometimes. And this is why the recruitment stuff, if there's someone is nailing it and getting 100% of it, he deserves all the money in the world, whoever this person is, because it's so hard to get right. Environment, family, moving them to schools, are they settled in the area? Am I happy? There's so much more goes kind of a lot of it outside of just going into training on the pitch. It shouldn't, because the fans are paying for a product to deliver for me on that pitch. That's what they're saying. But they're human beings as well, which is really hard. And that's the other side of it we kind of don't see. But it's just, look, you're at Hibs. Yeah, but if you're not making at Hibs, you're going to struggle at Sunderland. They'll argue up there that Hibs are better than Sunderland. They know what they're like up there.
Sure they will, yeah.
But you know, that's what they're like. Yeah. Because I played at Dunfermline, and they actually thought Dunfermline were in the Scottish Premier League. They thought it was better. And I used to argue all the time and say, slaughter them and say, there's no way this is probably League 2. And I used to get battered. I used to get slaughtered by them. But I'd agree with you, Matt, on that. Like, because if you're struggling in Scotland and that, I'd liken the Scottish Premier League. And I don't care what anyone says up there. It's League One, low League One at best, but apart from Celtic Rangers, maybe one of the team. Now, I'll get slaughtered for saying that, but I'll disagree 100% from what I've seen. Like I said, you're playing the likes of Leicester's and all these absolutely different levels compared to Hibernians and all
that. I just don't understand how they can be expected to come back from that loan spell to then be ready for next season.
Well, they're going to have to go straight back out again somewhere to try and, like, so just try and salvage what they've...
I look at Sunderland as in, like, is Sunderland a bigger club than Brentford? Is it a bigger club than Brighton? Yes, like compared to those two clubs, I would argue they're bigger.
No,
Sunderland's bigger.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
No one can argue that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So why are they on fire and why is their recruitment so good? So if I'm the business people at Sunderland, I'm just going to go, right, well, hold on a minute. Do you know what we should do? What? Go down there and find out what their model is and why don't we just copy it? There's no shame in it.
I think there's a degree of trying to do that. Yeah. But the difference is, like, we keep talking about, everybody loves to use Brighton as an example, ignoring the fact that Welbeck and Milner and people like that are there really important players. And they're the players who hold it together. Yeah. So it's not always just like this singing and dancing model where you bring this player in, get loads, go and replace them. Like, it doesn't...
Brentford do it. Ben Mee plays for Brentford. They're struggling a little bit, Brentford, but like They're not all.
But they brought loads of Danish internationals over who were like, weren't young kids.
Yeah, they're not like all 19
Denmark
years
team
old.
Player for them,
like,
yeah.
Like, you need, there has to be a balance in anything almost in life, really. Like, and it's like, Brentford and Brighton brought these players in. They haven't just, like, obviously Evans was already here, basically, when they brought them in. So they're not even just, oh, we'll just keep them until they're not replaced. They're bringing in the experience. I mean, Milner is like, what, 34? Is it? I mean, what an incredible. He's a freak.
But you imagine a Milner, and then you imagine an 18 and 19 year old in around him training and watching how he trains, watching how he conducts himself, and learning and going, do you know what? He's in early in the morning. He works harder than all of us. The bloke's 40.
Yeah.
Right. Do you want a career like him? Copy him then.
Look how he's revitalised Billy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Like, not saying James Milner's done that, but no doubt he's had a part to play.
It's obvious, isn't it? Stuff's just obvious. Like, it shouldn't even need people like us to say this. It's fucking obvious, isn't it?
Well, we had Kevin Ball, obviously, when I was up there at Sunderland, standards wise. First one in the morning, the fittest bloke, everything organised, no messing about, you know where he stood. Just in terms of that, and he'd be honest and say, look, I wasn't probably the best technical footballer. He could still play, and he doesn't get enough credit because he was actually probably better than what he was. But he knew his role. His standards were so high, you had to kind of almost, right, if my standards aren't even close to his, I'm in trouble here, like, because I'm going into that to try and impress him and other players, if you know what I mean. And yet, if you're going to get success and get promoted, you need these types of characters. And I always wonder with Sunderland is, what types of characters do they have in the change room? O'Nine, obviously. O'Nine. So O'Nine's personality, so he looks like that, a good type of character, like all fight and all that, what Sunderland want. But you need probably a few more. You need, like, I remember there was like Bawley, there was an Alex Ray, there was a Quinny, Mickey Gray. There was about 6-7 voices, like real big, strong characters. And you think, Sunderland, how many do they have? One or two? Like, who would talk in that change room? Who would talk at half time?
There's no one. Like, O'Nine
would talk at half time, wouldn't he?
And then you're looking at Dan Neil, and he's 22 years old. Like, Ballard, maybe. But again, he's 23, 24. There's no, like, Ballard, probably the next experienced player, really. He had a season at Millwall, his season at. I might have gone somewhere else, but he's obviously two seasons here. But it's like, the kids, these. Like, O'Nine's in it, he's not even 30. There's no one, obviously Evans is back in training, but there's no other player that side of 30 that's in the squad.
And I think in the Championship, like, from what I've seen over the last 20 years of just teams that have kind of bounced up and bounced down, they've always had, like, a big core. But even Swansea, when I was at Swansea in the Championship, when they went up to the Premier League, I looked around and I thought, like, all the characters, Ashley Williams, Gary Monk, Leon Britton, all these, like, big kind of characters. And I was thinking, I've never kind of seen a team go up with just one person that speaks and everyone's a little bit quiet and there's loads of young lads. It's very, very rare from what I've seen. You need, it might take it that you have 3 or 4 lads, late 20s. And I know the models now and that recruitment people are obsessed with it. Nobody over the age of 24. Brilliant. And I get that. But you need them. You need 3, 4, 5 players, late 20s, that have been, right, let's get someone who's had experience being in a Championship and getting into the Premier League. Who are they? Are they available? Right, let's get 5 of them then and put them into a squad with our young lads and let's see if that works. Now, it might not, but just try it. Try it and see what happens. Because that's what I've seen from the teams in the Championship that go up. They're generally all around. You rarely see it. Everyone under 23 get promoted. Very rare.
Absolutely. And also, just the last thing on the Brentford thing is, like, what people like love to use that as an example, and all the speculation about what might happen to Jack Clark in the summer. But Brentford went out and replaced Ollie Watkins with Ivan Toney. So, like, that needs to be right as well, doesn't it? So,
And it's hard to do, isn't it? It's very hard to do because the problem Sunderland have is every other recruitment department, every other club is chasing the same group of players. The agents are all, you know, what relationship does the club have with these types of people's agents? If you don't have a relationship, that might be a key factor. So there's so many other aspects of it.
They don't seem to have a very good one with Ian Hart, because he keeps coming out and talking about Jack Clark leaving, doesn't he? Which I guess it's his job.
He did that when he was at Leeds as well.
But then Sunderland sitting down with Jack Clark and saying, do you know what, Jack? We know that a Premier League team, a West Ham, or whatever it is, might offer you 60, 70 grand a week. We'll match it. We're Sunderland. We're a big club too. Are they having that conversation? And if they were, and saying, Jack, look, if we do go up, you're going to be the main man and we are going to pay you. They might not be. Because a lot of people, although you think it's like Sunderland's my club, the business people upstairs probably don't. Do you know what?
I don't think
they probably don't even. They probably never even spoke to Ian Hart.
No.
And that's what a lot of people don't sometimes don't realise and go, oh well, if I was Jack, I would want to play. I'd say I'd get that. But he's probably not. The business people have probably not even rang his agent.
I think
not
you
from
know. Stuart was the first one to go, and I think was Clark. They need to get it right because this is what they've pinned all the hopes on, selling players for these kind of fees. And then you get right, like we keep saying. I'm going to ask you one last thing before we take a quick break, and then we'll just do a quick 10 minutes on you, Thomas. You mentioned needing a strong manager or head coach, as it is today, around to talk to fringe players and stuff like that. It's clear that the players like Mike Dodds. It's clear that they're like, have you been in a position before where you've had a coach who's well-liked, really good coach? I know he got a couple of things really right in his most recent caretaker spell. But is it always a concern that it's a different role and if the defeats keep coming?
Not really. I think it's personality. I mean, I remember Gary Monk got this Swansea job and he was a player that got asked. The chairman actually pulled him in and said that this was at Swansea and said, Gary, how do you feel about being manager? Now, he went from being a player like I was and he come out of the office and said, what's a crack in there, Monks? He went, the chairman's just said asked me to be manager. And I sat laughing. And he went, no, I've been deadly serious. And he actually took to it really well because the players in the change room respected him. And like, you know, he had that kind of respect, if you know what I mean. So he actually done really well with them. So it kind
how
of...
How much did he change? And I'll tell you why I'm asking that in a minute. How quick... Because we've sat in Terry Butcher's house and spoke to him. And he just says, I got that completely wrong. Yeah. I tried to change too quickly. Yeah. I started, like, my best mates, I started just being a dickhead too, basically. Yeah. And,
like, he'd probably be the first one to admit it, but he'd say, we're not easy either. We're a nightmare as well. Like, do you know what I mean? It's gone from, right, I have to be really serious. I'm responsible for so much to me sending them stupid WhatsApps of like, memes at such and such a clock, and I'm saying, oh, he hasn't replied to that. Oh, he's changed. And he goes, Tommy, I'm trying to manage, I'm speaking to agents, I'm doing this and doing that, and you're sending me memes at 11 o'clock at night. Do you know what I mean? So, like, when you look at it, you think it is that type of job. It's stressful, but Martinez was the same. Roberto, he was a young lad, come in at 36 as manager in League One, 35. And he played with all the players, and every player on the team was calling Roberto, and he had to keep pulling them up and saying, it's Gaffer, it's boss. And they were just laughing and going, shut up, Robbie. Like, and you go, no, lads, being deadly serious, you're going to have to start calling me Gaffer, and he just giggle and laugh. So there's good banter with it. It can work certain ways, but I've seen it where it does work. But at the same time, is you can't beat those big personalities. Like Peter Reid was a big personality and almost like fearful person where you think, holy shit, you had a presence about him where you think if he spoke, wow, you shut up, you listen, you follow instructions, or else not only are you getting it, yeah, out.
It's that's why I like Mowbray, and obviously not that old school. We're not going to see that as much anymore when you talk about like Reid and what Keane might have been like. Yeah. But he carried authority with him though, and I felt like that's what was really good for this young group of players, because Dodge and everybody cracked on with the coaching and got them playing the way they were playing, and Mowbray was just a figurehead of it, almost like a manager but without the like transfer responsibilities. I think that's what is needed.
And
in
it's
this
trust
role
as well. It's trust. Like you'll get a manager that will say, this is the way we're gonna play, and he'll give you evidence of why he thinks it'll work. And then there's nothing better than when it happens on a pitch and it works, the players will come off the pitch and go, wow, everything he said was spot on and it works. And you buy into it and go, do you know what? I'll run through walls for him because he wasn't full of shit. Everything he said was spot on. And that kind of builds, whereas if it's a manager who's a kind of a, oh look, he's just, you know, he's kind of bluffing here a little bit, and kind of see through it a little bit, that's where you kind of think, don't really trust them, so I'm just going to do my own thing. And that then there's no cohesion on the pitch. And you kind of see those teams where, you know, when you see a team, you go, they don't look like they have a plan, or they win the ball and they get out wide. They don't look like that. They don't look like what they know what they're doing.
Whereas when you have those other types of managers that explain to you the week before it happens who they're playing against and almost predict this is what's going to happen, this is what they're going to do when it happens, then you're kind of going, wow, this bloke's... Well, and I've had those ones where I thought, this, I'll run through walls to him because he's backed everything up he said. So, but then again, that they're also hard to get. That's a problem. Where do you get these managers? They're so hard to get because every other club is trying to get them as well. That's a problem.
It's a big test for Dodds now because he'll have been what that game last week was the win really. Like Swansea at home, he's got a tough couple of games now. Leicester on Tuesday, Norwich on Saturday, and like.
Every game that league is solid.
It got it wrong
so
on Saturday as well.
Norwich have hit a bit of form now, haven't they? Because their manager was on the brink at one point.
Yeah,
when we beat them here, they were all predicting that that was going to be the last for him, and he's managed to. They still don't like him. It's kind of like it's what they're in the position what we were seeing would happen with Beale, where they're like, it doesn't matter how well they're playing, the two defeats away from the fans turning, and sometimes.
Do you know what I heard about Beale is? What I've heard from people that know him is that. He's supposed to be an unbelievable coach, but not a great manager. Now, there you go. There's a kind of a...
And a Mowbray figurehead kind of thing.
It actually looks like a saying. So anyone I've spoken to, I said, what's Beale like, apparently? And these are lads that have pro license coaching degrees and all this. And, have you ever seen him on a pitch? He's unbelievable. But then he might not be a good manager. So again, as a club, manage that and go, okay, look, you're going in as head coach and then we're going to have someone in as manager and you just do all the coaching and let someone else. Like, again, Peter Reid, I'll go back to Peter Reid. Peter Reid probably didn't see him. He'd probably come in on a Saturday and you wouldn't see him till Tuesday. But he's the manager. And then he'd have Bobby Saxton and Adrian Heath and everyone else doing the coaching. And then he'd come in on the Tuesday and that and he'd just manage, pick the team and manage people. And then and it worked.
This is why it never made sense. We're going back over old ground a little bit, but this was my reservation from the start, and I said that this podcast where I said that was when he came in and Dodds got promoted, and then but yet then Beale come in and said, I love getting on the grass and training the players and all that stuff, and it just didn't work.
Who said that?
Beale when he first came. So you're like. You're like, but this doesn't make any sense because Mowbray doesn't do that. Dodds does that. So now you've given Dodds a promotion and you've got two. Not conflicting, but two coaches who love to get in the grass and train. How do you know they're going to work? The whole thing just didn't. There was no joined up thinking at all around it. We are covering all ground.
No, we are. And it just like obviously the Beale not being a manager thing was clear, and he can't do press conferences. He's just tied himself in knots throughout the whole 6 weeks.
And when you're Sunderland manager or head coach, whether you like it or not, even. This football community in this city, even if you're not match goers, everybody knows who the Sunderland manager is, and everybody who doesn't go to the matches has a passing interest in football because they're that important in this city. That and it might sound cliche as anything, but it's true. I could speak like the mother-in-law or anybody who doesn't really know about football, but they know who the Sunderland manager is, and they will have an opinion on how they conduct themselves in press conferences and in interviews. That's the way it is, and that's got to be factored in. We'll take a little bit of a quick break and we'll come back when we'll do 5-10 minutes on Thomas and tell you about some live stuff that we've got going on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to the Wise Men Say podcast. I'm sure they've turned the music back up on here, you know. They turned it down for some sure it's come back. Nah, it'd be fine. We'll plough through. Right, Thomas, I think when we look at the demographic of the people who listen to this, I think the vast majority of people will know who you are, because it's generally 30 plus.
It's not Paul Butler.
But much to our surprise, we actually do have people who listen, and people even involved in the podcast, who didn't even watch Kevin Phillips play for Sunderland, which just freaks us all out. Didn't even see Roy Keane as manager
really,
for Sunderland.
It really bothered which, you,
yeah,
that, didn't it?
It did, very, very much did, Jack. I'm thinking about just ditching him completely. So, a little reminder for those people. Just tell us about... they're probably worked out by the accent that you know you're not from Roga. Just tell us about a little bit about your upbringing and how moving to the... to the glorious Sunderland, sandy beaches of Sunderland came about.
I was very lucky. I was Pop Robson was my U team coach, and Ricky Sprazier, Jed McNamee. So I was quite lucky. So I was playing for Ireland under 15s, and they came over and were watching. I think we played Northern Ireland. I think we beat them 1-0, and they were there. And I got a letter through saying, you know, we were
a letter,
not a text, not an email. An email, didn't know what that was. So I got a letter through, yeah, and it said you've been invited to trial for a week at Sunderland. And obviously, I'd just seen the Sunderland badge with the ship on it, and I thought it was Southampton. Didn't have a Scooby, like, where I had no idea, right? So anyway, I was elated, I was buzzing, you know. So I was thinking, yes, get in. So I came over, I had a trial for a week.
Is this like mid-90s, late-90s?
This would have been kinda? 97, 98, yeah. Around then. So I came over, stayed in the youth hostel, which was down the road, where we had 20 lads in the youth hostel, which was great. So that was an eye-opener. I was 15 or 16. Came in, I'd done quite well on my trial, and then Pop then just rang my parents then a week after and said...
On the house phone.
On the house phone, which my dad was like, don't be on that long, it's a pound a minute or something back in those days. Like, so... They were buzzing and just said, look, you've been offered a contract, an apprenticeship, and I think it was like a 1-year pro or whatever it was back then. And then that was it. Because in the usual stuff in school, I was finished. I was thinking 16, forget school. I want to get out, go play football. And in England, I mean, obviously, all the kids back in Ireland playing school by football, that's where they want to be. Obviously, playing in England, playing for an English team. So to get there was what I was buzzing. So that was it, really, and started off there. Moved over in 97 or 98, and I was here, I think until five, six years.
Did you ask anybody who Sunderland was if you didn't know who they were?
Well, when I landed, I was telling all my mates I was in Southampton for about a month. So I don't know how that works. Like, you couldn't get further away, but obviously I wasn't the brightest spark at the time. But I think the good thing was when I came here as well, it was there was a good few Irish players there as well, so it was easy for me kind of to settle in as well. Like, obviously Quinny was there, Niall Quinn. So he was quite good, but
I think the young Irish, so that'd been like Michael Reddy, Cliff
like Bourne, yeah. Finbar Lynch, who's a coach there now. I think he coaches the under-16s now. Brendan McGill, there was loads, there was so many, and then there was the Northern Irish lads. And then, I mean, the youth hostel was class. Like, we had room 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We'd have the Southern Irish in room 1. We had the Northern Irish lads in room 2. We had the Scandinavian lads on the other floor. And 3 in the morning, doors kicked in, fire extinguishers on. Like, it was great. And I think that's why our youth team was good as well, because we were all like living in the same building. Despite all that type of stuff and all the like fun and games, we all kind of like, we all got on well, and we were all internationals as well. So our youth team were decent as well. Like, we used to win the league, probably. I think we won the league. Man United, Liverpool, all these. So recruitment wise, even then, Sunderland, from the youth perspective, they made sure they got all the kind of best players in the British Isles.
You'd be in the first team now.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, we used to play the first team in practice matches, and Pop used to have us playing out from the back and playing kind of, you know, which was unheard of back then. It was more direct, as you can imagine. And Pop had us playing football, like the keeper passed out from the back, we'd make angles. And I used to always remember on a Friday, Reedy'd have the first team against the youth team, and we used to batter the first team. You couldn't get the ball, but then you'd have ball here, someone bang, nail you, and then go, well, listen, son, don't take the piss out of me and all that. And you know, so it's like I say, it was great. Like, you know, you wouldn't change anything, really.
Did you ever overstep the mark on that front? Because we've heard a few, we get Barley on all the time and stuff, but we've heard it from the other end, where people might overstep the mark, you know, do a little Megs in training or something. And
I did it once before, and so it was actually when I was on trial.
and I didn't know what first teams were, or reserves or anything. I was just, I was 16, didn't have a clue. And I could just hear this noise behind me, and I could just think, wow, you could hear the ground shake. And I was thinking, wow, somewhat of Bally obviously behind me, steam, you could just hear it. So I didn't actually mean it, so I turned out, and as he went to jump into tackle, I just turned and the ball went through his legs, and I went around and passed it, and I didn't even know what a Megs was. And then one of the lads didn't help me, I can't remember who it was, went, "Way!" or something like that, and Bally's face turned from white to red, steam coming out of his ears. And I just thought, wow, I'm going to get killed here. And I remember he chased me around the pitch, and he grabbed me, right? And a big grown man. But have you seen Bally's hands?
Yeah.
He's like a bear, basically, right? So grabbed me, and he goes, "You do that again, son. You take the piss out of the skipper like that again, there'll be trouble and all." And I was shitting myself. I'm bearing in mind I'm on trial. I'm trying to impress. So I was on the phone to me mum that night.
Did he get in the house phone?
I was putting all these pound coins in the thingy later on. And she was like, "How was your first day of trial, son?" And I was like, "Mum," I said, "all these English people are crazy." I said, "I've come over, I'm trying to impress." So I said, the main man, the captain, just chased me around the pitch, said he's going to kill me. And she went, "Oh, that's, you're just settling in, son, don't worry," and all this. And then I remember then the next morning I come in and Bally like grabbed me and he goes, "Come here, you." And I thought, oh, he's going to knock me out. And he goes, "Listen," he said, "that was class, that." He said, "A brilliant bit of skill." He said, "I loved it." He says, "But I'm not going to be showing up in front of me, mate. So don't ever do that again to the skipper." And then he slapped me in the back of the head and goes, "But I love it, son. Well done. Keep that up." So I was like, they're all crazy over here. I said, "I'm just going to have to accept it." So, but brilliant, all good personalities, like, you know, so...
Were you intimidated, or you need a certain kind of personality for it, don't you?
Yeah, you do, like, as in, like, I grew up in Dublin, and quite a rough area. We did, it's like, I'd say working class, but, like, probably, you know, people like poverty line stuff, you know, so to kind of get out of where I grew up was tough, and you either were really good academically, or you played football. There was no other, or else you went a completely different route. Probably a bit. So I grew up with probably 8 lads on my street, and probably 4 dead out of 8. So I know kids we played in the streets with, they just, if they weren't academically good or played football, they went that different route, whether it was crime or drugs or whatever it was. And, you know, so for me, getting out and getting over here, you almost, as a parent, you're going, "Oh, thank God."
Yeah.
You know, and Sunderland's a nice area. It's not, you know, it's not like, I mean, like some parts of Dublin are what they are. But, you know, my mum, when I came over here, she was delighted. She said, because she came over and looked at the area and said, "You know what?" She said, "Of all the places," she goes, "I'd like to live in England would be here, because it reminds me of what Dublin was like probably in the 70s and 80s. People are nice. They talk to you. They're very friendly. You know, that type of way." And she said, "You know what?" She said, if I want my boys to go somewhere, that's a great place to go." So she loves it. She loves it over here.
Yeah. The north of England should definitely be more like... definitely more connected to like Wales, Scotland, Ireland, isn't it? Like, yeah, it should be, really. You should claim independence without a doubt. Can you talk us through your debut and who it was against and what happened? And he said, "Can you remember your debut?" Like, you said, "Nah, not a clue, mate. No,
I think it was Walsall."
he's not sure.
No, I think it was Walsall in the, I think it was the, oh, I can't remember the cup called.
Whatever the League Cup was.
But the best one was the Chelsea one. I remember.
What's it? Is your league?
Chelsea date? Premier League. I didn't come on, but I remember. I remember Breedy shouting out of the dugout to Charlie Hurley's, shouting to Ricky. Ricky was coaching us at the time, and he said, "Rick, come over here, you know. And he said, it was on a Friday, and he said, "Tell Tommy he's on the bench tomorrow, 12 o'clock stadium." And I was absolutely I was like, I'm playing against Chelsea at the Stadium of Light. Poirier and all these like superstars. That's when we beat.
Was this the 4-1 game?
Yeah, that's when Quinny and Kev like lit it up, and I was on the bench. And I remember at the time I think it was on 175 quid a week. And I thought I was a millionaire at the time. I was thinking 175 quid a week, 17-year-old, doing all right. And then...
Which, for context, is probably about 500 quid a week probably, now, for anybody listening now.
Probably had no bills. And then I remember we won the game. And then afterwards, Bobby Saxon was going... I didn't know what the win bonuses were. So if you're on the bench and you didn't even come on, you got the win bonus. So he was going around, he was saying, "Oh, well, Tommy, 5 grand. And I was going, "What's he talking about?" I said, "What, 5 grand? What's he on about?" And he said, $5,000. He said, what are you going to do with $5,000? And $5,000 might have been 50 million to me at the time. I was thinking, wow. And he goes, yeah, the win bonus. He said, you're on the bench, you didn't come on. He says, but you got $5,000. I thought, wow, Party Central. I thought, Jesus, $5,000 for just
what did you do with it? Can you remember?
I blew it straight away. I think what was the nightclub called in the town? Beach or something?
Beach,
it was.
Yes.
I think that was the call. Drinks are on me. I was like, oh, come on, I'll get these in. But I remember that. And but then I was also thinking, come on, please put me on. But I remember Kev scored that worldie, that class goal. And
That was Paul Thurber's finest moment for Sunderland. They absolutely bossed the midfield that
day. Yeah. And like I say, it's, you know, you look at those times where, I mean, even training, it was lads do a few laps of the pitch, come in, stretch straight into a small side of game, really intense, and then 12 o'clock, right, off you go. It was never really like football is now. It's a lot more academic. Everything's on boards, PowerPoints, which is fine. But when I look back then, it was so simple.
How common is this, by the way? Because I know there was footage of like Grayson doing it on Sunday Until I Die, and then Beale doing it, and everyone's going in. But does this happen more than we think? Because I love a PowerPoint, by the way. I'm just getting that out there now. As long as there's not fucking 1,000 words on a slide and it's interactive and stuff. But not for footballers, surely, no?
Do you know what, for me personally, and again, I'll have loads of people that disagree, but me as a player, I loved it when, say, Reedy and those people were there, because you got worked every day as a player, so you come in and you just trained and you're sweating and you worked your socks off, and then once you've just done the basics, that was it. But I struggled when Coward Wilkinson came in. Oh, it was an absolute disaster. For me, it was. I hated football.
I think for everybody... But
some lads liked it. So like Michael Proctor.
Proctor liked it. I was going to say, yeah.
Proctor loved it.
He was
my mate growing up. Like, Procky, really great lad, yeah. Right? So me and him all the way in the youth team up. And I said, Proc, what do you think of Wilco? He goes, oh, I love it. He says, I'm learning loads, like by looking, and he's explaining stuff. And I was going, I hate it. Because I'm stuck in a room and I'm looking at stupid stuff all day, like an hour and a half on a screen about a throw in. I'm going, come on, will you? I need to go and train. And like, that's when I kind of got lost, and I just thought, it's not for me this. Like, I'd take Reedy and I'd go like Graeme Jones out of Swansea, who's, the sessions were just, right lads, 90 minutes, intense, you're going to burn 3,500 calories, if you mess about, I'll just run you, do we understand? Boom, love it, I know where I stand.
Is that the guy in Newcastle who was involved with England?
Brilliant coach, one of the best coaches, super coach, and those were the two lads down there. But just so good, like, and I looked at it, and as soon as I went into a classroom, and I was thinking, I got away from Ireland to get away from school. I know you're chucking me in a classroom again with PowerPoints.
There needs to be balancing. And honestly, like, as daft as this might sound, like, because I've just mentioned I love a PowerPoint now, but this transfers into, like, business or any walk of life, because a PowerPoint can kill you or it can inspire you.
Yeah.
And it needs to be the right balance.
It's like, for me now, there's too much academics in football. And I don't mean, I'm not having a go at them. You can't knock it, but it's just...
You think football lost something?
It's a personality. Like Liverpool have a physicist in charge of recruitment and all this stuff. And I'm going, look, well done, brilliant. Pay him $150,000 a year, but calm down. We all know who the players are. There's probably about 100 players in the world, not even that. There's probably about 20 players in the world that can play for Liverpool. We all know who they are. You're not going to go down the park on a Sunday and find someone who's going to play, go into Liverpool's first team. But like, do you know what I mean? It's just going to, you need, I think you said it earlier on, you need a balance.
Yeah.
But now there's some clubs that are all academic and know people from a playing background or whatever it is. And I always liken it to a surgeon. I always say, like, if I'm getting an operation, do I want a surgeon who's had 1,000 operations and has a success rate of X, or someone who's had no operations but has a doctorate in knowing about an operation? Who am I picking? I'm picking the bloke who's actually operated any day of the week. Now, that's probably a simplistic view. I'm chucking at it. And loads of people disagree, because there's good managers out there from non-playing backgrounds, and I get that. But genuinely, from what I see of it is, they're just overloading it with all these, even the terms they're using to switch a ball, recycle the ball. So you mean switch the ball? Like, it's annoying. It's just getting annoying. Like,
I think Nottingham Forest have taken it to the final extreme by getting the referee VAR analyst, Mark Clattenburg.
Especially because he's a mag.
Yeah. It's just pathetic, isn't it?
I mean, and the Gladiators referee.
Have you seen his?
I watch it. You know what? I love the Gladiator. Yeah, I love it.
Have you seen
I love
his blues tattoo?
When he says two in a Scottish accent, because that's how John Anderson used to do it. Yeah, that's mad.
But like you say, it's
Kattenberg tangent there.
A lot of people disagree with me because get Proctor on the thingy, and he'll say, oh, he loved it. But so it all depends.
I mean, we had a show with Proctor for 3 years.
Did you?
Yeah.
He's assistant manager now.
I wonder why he's blanking me calls. Yeah. Proc, any chance of a ticket? DB.
No, that's good.
But no, like I say, it's for me, it's about getting the balance right. And all the good clubs I've been at, well, good clubs, probably two, or Swansea I was at, when it was going well, the balance was right all across the board, you know, so.
Loads more we could ask you, but we're going to save it. We'll give you some more information, but we're going to get Thomas involved a lot more, I think. Handy that you live local. Oliver Blaze is gone, haven't they, now?
The only reason I'm getting involved is because I live next to the pub. Well, come on, let's be honest. Just tell people.
It's definitely a factor,
who's
Thomas. It's definitely a factor.
I was 20th on the list, right? I was all crossed out. Who's last?
I go to the pub a lot, and Thomas goes to the pub a lot.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It's a good thing. And we'll give you more information, but what we're going to do is obviously come here again, these things happen, and we're still deciding on some of the things, so we'll give you more specific information after this on the socials. Might put a little clip out on the podcast platforms just to let you know, but on the 28th of March,
yes,
we're going to come back here and we're going to do something in some form that is live with Thomas, so we want you to come along to that. We're still deciding exactly what that's going to be and what that's going to look like. Like, we know, we haven't just thought of this now. There's like a plan A, plan B, and plan C, that kind of thing. So we will let you know what that is, but just keep an eye out on socials and on your podcast platforms, and we will update you, but we'd love to see you here, basically. Come and meet Thomas, now we've had the introduction, and have a bit crack about football. It'd be great. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Didn't really go to Norwich much. Anybody confident for the weekend?
No, I'm going.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's some trek, Norwich, isn't it?
I've never done it.
5.5
hours. Have you done Ipswich before?
No, neither. So we're staying over there.
Look, it's a championship, so who knows what's going to happen. Like, every time I think Sunderland are thinking, I don't fancy us, they'll win. And again, like I say, against the Swansea when they come up, I thought, this is an easy, nice little 3-0. Look what happens. Yeah. So it's really tough.
Norwich was one last season where we thought we had no chance because we were in that rut that we'd had, and we won 1-0.
We were trying to go, didn't we, in the Harbour View?
Yeah, we did, yeah. Sunday, didn't I?
I went off to do that.
No, it's these things happen from now on, isn't it?
Yeah. I know, well, that's it, to be fair. We've had a lot of... we've given a lot of free advertisement out lately. No more. Right. No. Okay, so I'll get a quick prediction before we go, just for the people who want to know that. So, prediction, Matt.
2-2. Who's going to score? I've got no idea.
I'm going for a score draw, 1-1.
I think 1-1 as well. Yeah. So, score draw, across the draw. Yeah. Stop the rot a bit.
Anything away from home, I'll take a draw.
I was thinking stop the rot a bit before Leicester.
It'd be important. It's important we don't lose the game, to be honest. Yeah. Like, because we'd probably lose to Leicester.
So that becomes five in a row. Yeah.
And then the season tickets are getting thrown off cars.
And then Dodds comes in the question again, which is meant.
Proctor's all of a sudden manager, and then we've got no chance.
Proctor's even worse, getting the sack. And
I love that.
All of a sudden, I get a phone call from him. Oh, look, who's been sacked? I got a text from you.
I love that.
That's nice, isn't it?
But the first time I was ever in a position to text the Sunderland manager, that would be great. That would be new. I'm kind of hoping that happens now. Okay.
Steve wants my dad sacked.
Yeah. Okay. As always, thanks for listening.
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.